Good afternoon. My name is Steve Ratcliffe. I work with Cisco Systems. Prior to that, I was a lab manager at a Phipps lab, and before that, I was in the Navy. My background has been strictly analysis, cryptography, so this doesn't fall too far from home. The presentation is validating a virtual system without guidance from CMBP. You will find as we go through this thing, the title is confusing, the title is scary, but believe it or not, there is some guidance out there, and some of the other things I'll put out to you will give you some other information that will help you move along. This presentation will take about an hour and a half if I do all the talking and you all sleep. So hopefully we can get some interaction going here. I am not by far the world's expert on virtual. I do know quite a bit about it, but obviously there are other people out there that have just as much knowledge virtual, perhaps in different areas of the virtual than what I do. So the more people we have talking, the better. The big thing here, and I don't know if there's any CMBP NISC people around, the big thing here is to try to get enough people interested in virtual so we can push it, so we do actually get some good guidance out. The topics that I plan to cover is what we have up here. I'm basically going to walk through the FIPS requirements and tell you how they map over to the virtual requirements. And then I'm going to add in a few things on virtual, such as hypervisors and entropy, which you won't find documented, but they are part of virtual. I am not going to talk about FIPS 140-3 or anything else. I'm strictly dealing with 140-2. The other thing is I am going to talk about information that needs to be put out, published, so that the NISC and everybody else has it. I am in no way telling you to put out proprietary information to NIAP, to NIST, or anybody else. We don't do it, and I certainly wouldn't tell anybody else to do it. That is your information and yours alone. So we can get started. As you can see, this presentation is meant to open up discussions. Basically, what happened here was my boss came to me and said, I want you to do a presentation, 45 minutes, on virtual. I said, sure, no problem. Sometime later, I was asked to make that 45 minutes into 3 hours. how you take 45 minutes and stretch it into 3 hours is not easy, but basically, I had to do a lot of research, and some of that research you're going to find is kind of interesting because you probably weren't aware that it's actually out there. Other parts of my research actually came from sitting down with the CMBP and having a discussion with them, with the lab present, and talking about virtual stuff. They actually have some very intelligent people, and as much as this is going to hurt me to say it, they actually have some very intelligent people in the CMBP, and when it came to virtual, I was absolutely amazed. The knowledge that they have. So don't be afraid to talk to them. Virtual started back in the 1960s between IBM and MIT. You can argue over who gets the full credit. It went public in 1968. It became stable to the public in 1972. In 2007, the virtual desktop came out. This is 2015. 8 years is all we're talking about. For something. 8 years is not very long to sit back and look at it. But virtual is replacing physical machine infrastructure. Virtual is very serious with vendors, and the reason it's serious is because the government's asking for it. If you got a customer asking for it, you're going to want to build it. And if you're going to want to build it, you got to meet the requirements in-house, that being CMBP, because you can't sell to the government without meeting the requirements. So how do you do that? And we're going to walk through it and kind of give you an idea. It can be done. It's not difficult. There's actually one or two out there that are already validated on the CMBP's website. Be careful if you do a Google on virtual. You'll come up with more than one or two because like everything else, some people use it as a buzzword, so you will find that. All right, so let's start by building a virtual system. Most virtual systems come from a pre-existing system. It's already out there. It's what I'm going to refer to as the normal system. It's what you probably already have right now, and you're already selling it. You just want to take it from its normal operating and put it into a virtual. And that doesn't mean you have to go that way. You could build a virtual completely from scratch. So what I'm going to say will work for you. You just have to kind of take the normal part and put it aside. Like everything else, you have to define it as being a hardware, firmware, or software. This is where it becomes very difficult. What is it? Is it hardware? Well, it looks like it's hardware. Is it firmware? Well, it could be firmware. Is it software? When I talked to CMBP, that was the first question out of their mouth. The first question. And my response to them basically was my take on it, and then they proceeded to tell me their take on it, and several months later, I had to agree with them. And it's not because I was looking to get it validated. It's just their logic behind it, yeah, it made sense. And when you start doing a lot of research and you start finding things out, you realize that, okay, yeah, there is a lot there. Some things that you basically don't realize. As you can see, when we talk about a normal system, we're talking about an OS, an executable programs, and a crypto module. When I say executable programs, and I'm going to use that a lot today, executable programs can be anything from OpenSSL to OpenSSH to your drivers to running your ports. It's anything it executes. Of course, all of it runs on your OS, and you have a cryptographic module inside it. So we take that system. Now, we look at the OS. Again, we're looking at building a virtual. So we have an OS. We put some more executable programs there. And now we add a hypervisor. We have another OS, some more executable programs, and a cryptographic module. We had three. We now have six components. We have the server main body, which is the OS, the executables. We have the virtual system, which is the OS, executables, and crypto module. And then we have this thing in the middle that I refer to as the middle management. It controls everything. If you take the hypervisor out, you really don't have virtual. You have to have some way of controlling things.
So you're talking about type two hypervisors.
Yes, I'm strictly in that. So we look at the main body from what's normal to what we have here as the virtual system. And just looking at it alone, you can see the vast difference. And I can't emphasize this enough. Because it's a vast difference, it becomes confusing just there alone. Webster defines virtual as not formally recognized, hypothetical, inferred, close to but not quite something. Okay. When my kids were younger, I'd call this a make-believe world. And in a way, virtual kind of is a make-believe world. It's not real. The term virtual is popular. It's a buzzword, which I mentioned earlier. Conceptual versus physical. An architect will show you plans for a house. The builder will show you the actual house. And here's where we get to it. We have the difference between real and conceptual. You can sit here and say, that's real. The drink inside it, you all see the drink, right? Conceptual. Another analogy is the mind versus the brain. The mind, of course, is what we look to study. The brain, of course, we can actually touch and feel. Well, the doctors can touch and feel it. And to me, that's probably the best way to look at virtual, the mind and the brain. The mind is the virtual. The brain, of course, is what you can physically touch. A computer system creates an environment that looks real, but it's not. The operator sitting there thinks it's real, but it's not. So why do we go to virtualize? Well, mainly it's because to optimize the hardware. If we can optimize hardware, it's going to cost less money. Customers like that. It's going to take up less physical space. We can go from a nice big computer room down to a closet space. And then down to the Dick Tracy watch someday. So here's where you have to fully understand conceptual and environment. Virtual is made up of conceptual and environment and physically contained within their own. So the diagram we have down below is what we said was the virtual system that we built. Conceptual is the OS, the executable, the crypto module. That's the conceptual part of the virtual. The OS, of course, and the hypervisor is the environment with which it's all running and operates from. And, of course, its own environment is the virtual system. All of these have to be present to make up the virtual system. Concept over imaginary, mind over brain. Remember, I said virtual is the mind while the computer is the brain. I keep going back to that because to me it's the easiest thing to understand. Doctors today are spending centuries trying to understand and measure the mind. Well, if we think the mind is like virtual, does that mean the CMVP is going to take centuries to come up with guidance? Well, it may be close to decades before we get good guidance because the way virtual is, remember now, it's only 8 years old. It's still an infant. It's still growing. So to create guidance on something that's still growing is not easy. So how do we test virtual? I'm sure you've all seen the show Twilight Zone. In a way, that's what we've entered into. It's the unknown. Is it real or is it not real? That's really what virtual is about. And as long as you understand that you're asking guidance to validate something that you can't physically hold or touch, you can kind of understand where the CMVP is coming from. And believe it or not, it pains me to keep saying the CMVP is right because I constantly have to argue with them, both when I worked in a lab and as a vendor trying to get stuff through them. So what does it mean towards the FIPS validation? The reason my boss asked me to do this is because I'm currently working to get a product through validation that's FIPS. It's not been easy. Sometimes it's a pain because you think you have it understood and somebody comes up and tells you something slightly different. And it's not that they're mandating it. It's just they're putting in 2 cents and you stop and think about it. And you realize, yeah, logically that makes sense. So, as I said, we're going to take FIPS 140-2, and we're going to kind of walk through that requirements and then map it to the virtual. So we're going to start with the first one, the boundary. Let's define the boundary. Where is the boundary? Does the boundary go around the virtual module, around the hypervisor, around the processor, around the API? Where is that boundary? Every document that you create for FIPS has to define a boundary. So it's easy to build a block diagram. We can label it all and put it all up there. But now try to sit back and say, here's the boundary. This is where we're concerned with. Well, if you remember correctly, This is the normal system that I said we start with. So if we take that normal system and we isolate inside it what we're worried about, and we pull that out, that's really what we're working for. That's what we're looking to get validated. We're not looking for that hardware. That's part of the normal system. We're only worried about the crypto module, the executable, and the OS. That becomes the virtual module. That's what we're looking for. So, we're dealing with the software module and everything that was in it, but what about the hypervisor? If you don't have a hypervisor, you can't control it. If you can't control it, what good is it? So, is the hypervisor part of the boundary? Also, the hypervisor is the source for providing entropy input. So again, we're back to this block diagram and trying to figure out where we're going to draw the circle around. Is it the virtual module? Pretty straightforward. Is it the virtual module and the hypervisor? Keep in mind, you have to provide this in your FIPS 140 document. So if you can't define it, how is NIST going to sit back and review it and accept it? So again, we're back to that normal system that we originally had, and we pulled that module out of it, and we look at that module and we compare it against the block diagram, and it's enough of it's there, and you can see that module is just the virtual module. That is my boundary. That is my cryptographic boundary. That's all I'm concerned with. Hypervisor, it's outside of my cryptographic boundary. Even though it provides inputs to it, it's irrelevant to me. My boundary is just the cryptographic module, the executables, the OS. The same thing that was on your norm system, the same thing you already took through a FIPS validation. And if you think about that, it's the same thing you already took through a FIPS validation, half your work's already done now. You've already done it. You just have to clean it up. So we have the virtual module, we have the physical or the operational module, and of course we have the physical all inside this block diagram. So we've already identified the main elements, the boundary. So the next thing you have to sit back and go is, okay, is it software, firmware, hardware, or hybrid? And as I said earlier, that was the first thing CMVP asked me. The very first thing. Well, it's easy to sit back and say there's no disjointed special purpose hardware, so we can take the hybrid stuff and take it out. So we've gone from 4 down to 3. Well, that's easy. again, keep in mind, we're looking at just the virtual module system here. Notice when we take it outside, we don't have any hardware, we just have this code. So if there's no hardware, we can rule out hardware. So now we've taken away hybrid and we've taken away hardware. Keep in mind, I am talking generic here. Yes, I can also stand here and argue that there is hardware if we associate it to a specific platform. But if we go down that road, we're really getting away from virtual, and we'll talk about that later. So what does that leave us with? That leaves us with software and leaves us with firmware. And really the only difference between the two is one can be dynamically written and modified, and the other one cannot be dynamically written or modified. And that's what you have to sit here and tell yourself. Logically, my mind says, you can't modify my code. It's in that system, you can't modify it. Why would I put something out there that you can modify it? So my mind says, it's firmware. And that's the direction I went. cannot be dynamically modified or written. Seemed pretty straightforward to me. I mean, who's gonna sit there and put somebody into a system and let somebody modify their code? Well, the question becomes, can you prove it's not modifiable? Can you stand there with 100% say it cannot be modified? And then the next question is, how'd you lock it down? It's a software module. It's not firmware, it's a software module. And the reason being isn't because of how you put your code in, but the environment with which it's running in and what can be done to it. And if you look at it in that way, and basically what we're looking at, unlike other products, we're defining this because of attacks that could occur to it. And again, we'll get into that later on. But for now, you're looking at a software module. And as I said, I sat down with NISC, and my attitude is it's a firmware module, and they immediately shot me down and told me it's a software module. I didn't like it, and it took almost a month before I finally sat back and said, yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's not because of how I built my system, but it's because of how it lives. Yeah?
So, I mean, the key there was, like, when you said that, during execution, I could read it out of my ROM, right, and it's in the house in memory, and you would have to have your pages marked so that they were not writable. I mean, is that what you would have to do in order to prove that to them?
Well, the biggest thing is, look at how it lives. It lives in a virtual module, okay? That virtual module has two main means of attack, a next-door neighbor virtual module and the hypervisor. Those two, because of the way they are, which are outside of your boundary, basically means there is a possibility that you could modify this. It's not that you would modify it. It's not that your user would modify it, but...
Would that satisfy them as being locked down, or does it have to be part of your module to make that claim?
They're going to sit back and tell you it's not how you created it, but it's how it lives. Again, it lives in a virtual world, and because of the types of attacks that exist, and we're going to get into the attacks later on, because of those type of attacks, your module becomes susceptible to attack, which means during that attack, something could have been modified. And because of that possibility, they're leaning towards software. And it's not so much they're leaning towards software because that's 100% done. It's because right now, with what we know and everything else, we're better to lean towards software and accept the fact that it could be modified than to sit back and say it's a firmware module and it can't be modified, and then somebody comes along and attacks it and modifies. So they're kind of leaning towards caution, and they're doing so because of what they know about virtual.
Well, and it sounds like then nothing could be considered firmware, because at some point...
Today, you're absolutely right. Today, nothing would work. But that doesn't mean 10 years from now when we fully understand everything. I mean, every time I talk to an engineer, they sit back and swear up and down, you can't go from one VM to the other VM. You can't get through the hypervisor to attack it. And my comment to them is, you designed the code that runs on that VM. You didn't design the hypervisor. You don't own that hypervisor. You don't own the VM that's running next to it, all of which make up the virtual world that we're dealing with. And we have to look at all of that. And that's really the easiest way to look at this is side on the side of caution. Yeah. If you had the crypt...
In other words, if you had the whole thing is that the virtual machine is an encapsulated FIPS module inside of a larger FIPS module, then it would be, it's just a component. It could be firmware. Because it could be attested to being unmodified by the externality of the hypervisor and the operating system model.
The problem still becomes the hypervisor is not your product. The hypervisor... Well, I'm going with what currently exists today, okay? There's like 50 hypervisors out there, and I don't know all of them. Yeah, maybe you did manufacture one, and maybe you've put it in. But keep in mind, we look at virtual as a hypervisor, and the virtual module is running on top of it or separate from it. you make it sound like you're trying to combine the two into one.
I'm merely trying to understand the assumption. If the assumption is that I have the operating system as a trusted operating system, then any virtual machine inside could in fact potentially be trusted.
Well, that's a nice assumption to make, but can you prove it?
Yeah.
I can show you attacks that have happened from one virtual module over to another. And there are two areas that we have to concern ourselves with. And one of is the modules going attacking, and the other one is the network. Well, again, yeah, I mean, you can always find, like I said, I can argue a hardware one and sit back and put it in a hardware, but then I sit back and go, okay, is it really virtual now? Why did you go down that road if you've isolated it all into one package and made it, just like we're going to talk about what level this is, and I can, you know, I'm going to tell you how we're going to do the presentation, but I can also tell you it can be other levels, but I'm going to caveat that also. I mean, everything has a rule to it. I'm just saying majority of what you're seeing going from a pre-existing system, and I'm taking that out and I'm going to put it in a virtual world, and the reason I'm doing that is because that customer wants system A, system B, and system C all running on one system. So I sit back and say, fine, I'm going to put it in a virtual world, and that's how I'm going. It's a generic configuration, and based on a generic virtualization, this is the issues we have. Yeah, you can always build something slightly different and sit there and look at it. And each system has to be looked at differently. You know, if what you're saying...
The corollary to your assumption is that it's a single tenant. You're not having multiple tenants of virtual machines running at the same time.
Well, but unfortunately, you do have multiple tenants running inside different virtual worlds on the same system. Right? That's the purpose of a virtual. Exactly. And that's why we have this.
That's what I wanted to get at.
Okay. Now, can you tell me how I got there? as I said, you know, I thought it was firmware. That was the direction I was going with my system. You know, talking with CMVP, it was simple. Remember, the VM is controlled by the hypervisor. Additional VMs can be established by the hypervisor on the host. Access to the VM is determined by the hypervisor. The hypervisor is outside the boundary, and in most cases, it's not even part of your system. You didn't concern yourself with it other than you needed it for testing purposes and validations. When it came to your customer, you gave the customer the code. They came up and got their own hypervisor. They had to set it all up. So basically, we're dealing with a software module. So now we have to sit back and say, okay, is it level one? Is it level two? And really the only difference between level one and level two is level two takes physical security into consideration. Well, if I'm taking physical security into consideration, that means I can't modify it once I validated it. If I can't modify it, how can I have multiple VMs running inside the system? I have to have one. So now the question I have is, why are you using virtual and not just running a software system or back to your original system that you had before? Why are you dealing with a virtual if you're trying to go for level two where you have to isolate things down? It doesn't make sense to me. Not saying it can't be done, just doesn't make sense to me. And the biggest thing you have to remember is with a level two, you can't modify it. If you can't modify it, that means if you took it through, you better have every virtual module that you want running on there present for your validation. Because if you add anything else to it after the validation, you've killed the validation. So, again, it can be done, but... As I said, you know, because you have multiple VMs that can be making changes to your module, a level two is not really something that's practical, but it is possible to do it. So we've sat back and defined the boundaries. We've sat back and defined what kind of module it is, and we've sat back and determined the level. Those were the three biggest things, and when I had my discussion with CMBP, that was the first three things that they asked for, because they wanted to see if I was on the same wavelength as their thoughts. So now we're going to move on to the other portions of it. Cryptographic ports interfaces, as everybody should be aware of, when you're dealing with FIPS, you got to have the standard data ends, controls, statuses. That's all pretty standard stuff. In a virtual side, the way it works is you don't have multiple, you just have a single entry, and you have all these traveling over that. So, so when I sit back and say I've got all these traveling over a single one and there's no way to isolate it, that kind of says I can't do a level 3 or level 4. So again, I've ruled out two of the four, and I'm now looking at 1 and 2, just based on this. The beauty of this, though, is if you've already taken your system through and got it validated, and you had that norm system that we talked about first, everything you identified in ports carries right over. There's really nothing you have to do other than you need to document the data in port that's going from a hypervisor into your system, and that's a pretty straightforward statement you have to add to the system. So that's an easy thing to meet. Roles. Every FIPS module has to have a cryptographic officer, has to have a user. A maintenance role is something that's optional. In most modules I've ever built or tested or validated, we kind of put the maintenance thing on the side. My attitude is, don't bring something to CMBP that's only going to bring questions. So we keep that to the side. And I'm the first one to admit that. Done it numerous times. So if they're here, and I don't see them, but you do have to have a crypto officer. You do have to have a user. Both are required. What about the admin role? The admin who controls the hypervisor. The admin who controls the hypervisor, which controls all the input into your system. The admin which controls the hypervisor, which controls the entropy that's going into your system. It's not required. I highly recommend you at least know what it is. I highly recommend that you put some kind of document towards it. Doesn't have to be in your security policy, but have something. Because when you get around to the security policy, toward the end of it, you've got to talk about putting it into an operational mode. And here's where you're going to need something like that. So having that document in any kind of form, at least you have something there. And I don't care if you do it and mark it up proprietary so NIST can't see it, but just the labs. But you should at least have it. Finite state model. This is the part or the thing that I've always thought was kind of ridiculous. I understand trying to comprehend the flow of how things go through it. A lot of emphasis gets put on a finite state model. In all the years I've been doing FIPS, I've gone through CMBP validators that didn't even care about the finite, they didn't even look at the finite, to today they're looking at how you spell finite, let alone how you set it up. The big thing to remember, you already had a normal system. You already had a finite document for that normal system. That finite hasn't changed a whole lot coming over to the virtual. The biggest thing we have to concern ourselves with is the power on state. When did power on exist? Under the normal system, we said the power on when I powered up, gave power to the hardware system. Obviously here, when we gave power to the power up system, is irrelevant to us. We have to worry about when does power up exist. So that's about the biggest change you have to deal with when going from the normal system over to here, is defining when your power up exists. And normally we consider power up to be when the virtual module is initially loaded or called.
So is that when the hypervisor starts or when the VM running on top of the hypervisor starts?
When does the cryptographic component within the VM get loaded for activity? That's when it starts. So my guess is it's not going to be when your hypervisor came up, but it will be shortly thereafter, and then everything has to turn it over to the cryptographic module. But it's whenever you've defined the startup to exist, when that system has been loaded to be operational. So three basic systems we covered, and all relatively simple. So even though I said when guidance doesn't exist, that's kind of a far stretch because there is guidance out there because some of the stuff is really irrelevant. We can carry things over. Physical security. Here's where it gets a little bit harder. Modules implemented in software firmware such that the physical security is provided solely by the host platform. Okay? We're not dealing with a host platform. We don't care about the host platform. And in virtual, you probably have numerous host platforms because you're going to say it runs on every server out there. So we're not worried about physical security outside the realm. Unless you're going after levels 2, 3, and 4, then you have to worry about physical security. And again, my question becomes to you is if you're going after level 2, how did you lock it down so nothing else could be loaded inside the virtual world? If that still exists, then you can't go after level 2 in certain areas. So if I can't do that, why am I worried about level 2 and physical security? The only way that physical security becomes really relevant to a virtual world is if you've got an end user that's specifically asking for something out there because they're going to make this system running four of your systems in a virtual world stand alone out in the public, and they need it locked down. So it's going to be a one-off type system, and you're going to have to try to build it. Like I said, I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying you're going to have a little bit more work to do to lock things down. But general rule of thumb, most virtual systems, because they're software, are going to be a level one product. Because they're level one, physical security becomes not applicable. Well, I mean, yeah, if you're going after level two, then a whole lot of other things are going to change. You probably would look at, okay, I'm not going to call it software. I'm going to call it firmware because I have locked things down differently. I mean, it's a lot of different things are going on there. In fact, you might even just call it hardware because you're putting it inside a system. So a lot of things are going to change. I'm just basically saying for physical security, that one section, if we're going level one, because it's a software module, we don't have to worry about it. That's the beauty of it. So it's one thing, it's not applicable. And so you're right. It's operational environment. Although this is a software module and no modification should be made, and I apologize, unfortunately, as I said, I work for Cisco and my thoughts were on iOS and ASA. Everything should be non-modifiable. However, should not is not acceptable. And that's where we have to look at it. You know, you sit back and say it's not modifiable. I say it could be modified just for the sheer nature of how it lives. First, we have an OS running on a virtual module. This OS access is controlled by the hypervisor. The hypervisor is controlled by other VMs. FIPS 140 says a modifiable operational environment. Okay? We don't control the access to it. We don't really have anything to do with it. So the fact is add, delete, modify functionality could exist. So we have to sit back and say, okay, and as I said here, the key here is maybe. Because it's possible that it could be modified, because it's possible that I can add a keylogger into that virtual world, because it's possible that from a separate VM I can come over to it and add something to it or modify it to it, because all that exists, I now have to think about the operational environment. So what used to be usually is not applicable for most products, we now have to think about. We now have to address. And if you look at FIPS 140, there's four requirements you have to address. The first one being single operator mode of operation. When I first saw that, the first thing I thought of is, wait a minute, single operator? This is a normal system that had entries via Telnet, entries via SSH, different kinds of entries, and I bring it into a virtual world. Wait a minute, I don't have single. I have multiple, just like I did with the normal. But in this case, I have to cut it down. And how do you cut it down? How do you make it single operator without modifying your code? Well, believe it or not, CMBP was nice enough and gave you that answer in an IG. Whether it stays there over long term, I don't know. But their attitude is, if you're in a server environment, that server becomes the user of your system, and that server is single. Virtual all runs on a server-type system. So the IG basically answered it for us, and like I say, don't know if they're going to think about this and change it, but today, the way it's written, that server becomes your single user, so you don't have to modify the code. You just have to identify that your role is a server role. It's not a person, but it's a process. And a lot of people get confused when they try to define the crypto officer and the user, and they think it has to be a human being. It doesn't have to be a human being. It can be a process. It can be hardware. It can be anything you want it to be. In this case, we're going to define it as the server. Hence, it's a single operator. The other parts of the key storage installation is in a form that protects it, and of course approved integrity systems. This is stuff that's in pretty much everything and really shouldn't be an issue for you. You're taking it from a normal system and you're bringing it over. Okay, you brought it over. Well, that means you probably brought over how your keys were stored in that normal system. So you probably already met that requirement. You set it up in such a way that it's protected, and you set it up with some kind of integrity things, because most vendors do that anyways. So again, 4 points that have to be, and the biggest one, of course, is the single operator, and FIPS is already written to get you that direction. So today, this shouldn't be an issue. So the fact that you have to go down the road of operational and identifying as operational, it's not a problem. You just have to sit back and look at your system and say, okay, it's a server. So how does that server communicate? People are so used to thinking human being, and the human being logs on, the human being does this. Well, yeah, but the human being is telling the server is communicating. The human being is not one sitting there talking to the hypervisor going through, it's the server making commands.
So, I'm sorry, but earlier we said that the code is modifiable. Mm-hmm. Because the hypervisor can change it if it wanted to. If that's the case, how can you claim that the keys cannot be accessed by a process other than the cryptographic module? I mean, the hypervisor could access those, right?
How did you make that claim on a normal system?
I don't know.
You probably stored the keys in encrypted format. You probably stored the keys in some way that wasn't accessible. You carried that over from that world to the hyper, so your keys are probably still in there in a cryptographic format. That means they're encrypted.
This is software, so all of this stuff is running in the memory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Physical memory, which the hypervisor has access to.
Right.
Even if the keys are encrypted, they have to be there in some plain text form in order to encrypt them, don't they?
Mm-mm. If they're encrypted, that's the reason they're encrypted, to protect them. I mean, if you have them stored in such a way that they're in plain text form, then you're going to have to sit back and look at the second bullet and figure out, okay, how am I preventing access to it?
In order to perform any operations, it's going to be in memory.
Well, your operations will usually, when it goes to get that key, it's going to decrypt the key, bring it into operation, use it, and then it's going to put it back. It's not going to maintain it out. Yeah, they're always going to have that period where you've got a glimpse of it. There's a period where the entropy is zero. But yet we call on entropy. I mean, there's always that case. I'm just basically saying if you've got those keys set up like you normally would, encrypted, you're fine. If you have them in plain text format, then yeah, you're going to have to address the second bullet, is how those keys are being protected. But it's considered during operations, and it's not going to be sitting there idle.
I think there's two issues here, right? One is the key store, which will always be encrypted and protected.
Hopefully.
It has to, correct. And at the time of using the encryption key for data access, I think you're exposed. I think there's no real answer.
Right.
Some of
Yeah.
Encrypted and decrypted for their reactors. I mean, you really don't have a chance.
They don't compress. They process separation. So they do protect your memory. So if you put a blank disk to your memory or an Intel processor, no other process can get to it. It spawns. When it spawns a process, that process has got its own privileged access to that memory. But that's not something you have in a virtual environment. Or do you?
Well, you probably do. I mean, the virtual works the same as a regular system.
So you get process separation.
Well, no, but even in your case, the operating system may be privileged and has access to physical memory you can get at. And you are exposed for something.
That's what microthreading does in the actual physical operating system. It does actually protect that memory so you can't access it.
Well, from other VMs, its job is to protect it from other VMs, but if your hypervisor is corrupted...
In a traditional, a normal system, you get protection from the processor, and the processor are protection.
And the operating system.
Yeah.
I think the way around this is, you have the VM, which you said is software, and it has a logical boundary. There's also a physical boundary that's reflected there. The physical boundary, not the entire unit itself on which the CPU lives and all the hardware, it's the physical boundary.
Usually a physical boundary would be, everything.
So level one, as long as your CSPs are within that physical boundary, you're okay.
Yeah, but in virtual world, you can't say that because you can't put it outside the virtual side because then it's completely outside. So
it's kind of hazy as to whether or not this is actually the logical boundary, physical boundary.
Well, in this particular case, your keys really need to be in a controlled area. And as they said, we were going from a normal to a virtual, so everything in that normal is going to come over. How we stored the keys in the normal in that world is going to carry over and stay within that virtual module side. That's where we're looking to put it. That doesn't mean you have to. I mean, if you build a software system,
Can you define physical boundary as being the physical unit itself?
You can define anything you want.
So in that, doesn't mean you define it that way. Would not it be okay then that the hypervisor or some other thing can see that as well, they're within the physical boundary?
Well,
like another application, I have a software module.
You have to concern yourself then with... The problem is the virtual cryptographic module would have no clue where those keys are because they're outside that virtual module. It wouldn't even know keys existed because it doesn't know what's outside there. It doesn't even know anything. So it basically would have no knowledge of any keys existing. So every time it wanted to decrypt, it would look around and say, I don't have any keys. So you have to worry about it because the way virtual works, it only knows what it has inside its virtual module. It doesn't know what's outside it.
I think the problem is it knows it has things inside of it, and it gets plain text keys inside, but those are actually stored in some piece of RAM somewhere.
Right.
Okay, which is actually a piece of RAM of this overall, the overarching hardware. So it basically echoed out to some other thing that possibly something else could read. Okay, but as long as that's within the physical boundary, that's okay.
Well, now the requirement is about the processes. It's not about, it's about things that can happen within the physical boundary. You can have other processes that can access your keys. And if you can do that, then you don't meet the requirements.
One of the things that you need to consider, too, I guess, in this, is that if this thing is being run as a single user, and that is the process that runs it as the single user, that user is considered to be trusted because that's the cryptographic officer, especially the cryptographic administrator officer.
Mm-hmm.
They're considered to be trusted. So that presupposes that you're not letting that process that's running be debugged. But whether or not that means that you have to now assert something about whether there's debug capability in the system that's it turtles all the way down problem. You don't have that problem with a bare metal or a normal solution.
Right.
Because you can use process separation and say, well, we've forbidden the debuggability of the process threads that have the decrypted secret. good entropy in those other VMs.
Yep.
And that's the other problem. I really don't understand how to write for virtual machine, how to show for sure that I have guaranteed this is entropy that is not being shared with anybody else.
And that's why the CMVP's crypto group is their biggest concern is entropy. And where's it coming from and how do you guarantee it? And we'll talk about entropy. And one of the biggest concerns is with multiple VMs and all calling on the entropy, what happens when your VM goes to call on entropy and there's none there? Because the others have specifically been set up in such a way that they're attacking the entropy on the hypervisor, which is going to weaken your system. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, well, that's, yeah. All these become things you have to look at. And so, you know, to me, I took a normal system and I moved it into a virtual and I mapped it one for one. I brought the keys the way I contained them there into the virtual side. You know, I'm just trying to make it as simple as I can. And everything has a rule of thumb that you can always differentiate from. In this case, if we're going to sit here and put the keys anywhere outside the VM, then you're going to have to answer questions. If you're going to put the keys in such a way that they're not protected, you know, CMVP is going to ask you. They're going to point blank come back and ask you how this is being done, and you have to be able to tell them. Actually, they're not going to ask you. They're going to ask the lab. The lab's going to come and ask you. But so you have to be prepared for this. And the easiest thing is if you've mapped it from a normal system and carried it over, you pretty much have it already mapped out. You just have to adjust it for the virtual side, assuming you can adjust it. I mean, I don't know how you did it when you brought it over, but that becomes the one area you have to look at. It's anytime you bring something over, because remember now we're talking about a make-believe. It's fictitious, and we're trying to sit here and talk about protecting keys inside a make-believe fictitious world. You kind of wonder, how do you do that? As I said, NISQ was kind enough to put out in the IG 6.1, which talks about server and software and how the server serves as your single user. As long as that exists, that becomes your way of handling a single user. I suspect with time they will adjust that so that it doesn't exist unless you can actually prove that it in fact is a server that's making the calls into your system, which shouldn't be any harder to prove than any other piece of software to show it's a server making the thing in. And again, the biggest thing here is most people don't realize that users don't have to be physical people. They can be processes. Which guidance? That's just one piece of all of it.
Well, this interpretation of this guidance, though, because I think about it, we're an OS vendor and we've got a crypto module. We have actually a couple of cryptographic boundaries in our system, and I think we're a server OS, mm-hmm. We might be serving 10 different things on one server. Mm-hmm. So how does that make it have one?
We don't care about the other things. We only care about the cryptographic module.
Right, but.
And that cryptographic module is probably singular.
There's one cryptographic module, but it's serving NFS, Kerberos, IPsec.
But the server is only doing one call at a time, usually, the way a server works. It doesn't sit back and make multiple calls in, because a server is a singular. Well, then you may have a problem. Right now, this is how NISQ is looking at it. Well, if you read a lot into it, you can get really confused with it. If you go with the fact, because they're not talking, 6.1 doesn't talk about the types of servers out there. It just basically is talking about servers. And it's very generic. Like I say, it exists today. Will it be there tomorrow? I don't know. You will find most of the stuff inside of FIPS 140 and the IG. The way it's written, it's hard to understand. And when you think you finally understand it, they modify it with another update to the IG. So every time you think you've got it out, yeah.
Is there a way to
Well, that would be executable.
Controlling access between whatever executable and your cryptographic model.
No, it would be the application, because that's what's making the calls to it. And that's why, as far as, you know, they look at a server as it's a single application, single things being done. I mean, you can always have multiple things going on, but usually it's a single. You know, when you brought the module in, you allowed users to connect to the system via SSH. You allowed them to connect via Telnet. You allowed them to connect via IPsec. So you got multiple users, physical users, connecting to the system. A server is a single system, and that's how they look at a single system, and that application is a single user making a call to the module to work.
So just so I make sure I have this clear in my mind, if I had four servers running in four separate VMs on this box, and I had one VM that was providing my cryptographic services, that's where my cryptographic module is, these four servers calling that guy, they would treat that as a single user?
Say that again.
I've got four different servers running on this box in different VMs.
Four different servers. So you have multiple OS.
Server, I got a Windows server.
Right, right.
So I've got these different servers running on this box. And I've got one VM that contains the cryptographic module that provides all my cryptographic services to these different servers. Would that be treated as a single user then?
More than likely not.
It's multiple instances. So you have multiple instances.
Would be a single? So even though you'd have multiple running at the same time, you'd still consider it single? Hey, I like that. I like that. So maybe they won't change 6.1. I won't argue that. Are you with CMBP?
No.
Say what?
I'm with CMBP.
Okay, you're not with CMBP, are you? I didn't think so. Okay. I'm on the caveat there, because I don't want anybody to walk out of here thinking they just heard something that came from the words of CMBP. So, say what? Well, when I talked to Apostle, he forgot that this presentation was going on. So that's probably no. Okay, what I thought was going to be easy turned out to be a little harder. So let's move on to cryptographic keys, DRBG, and entropy. Things that I think will be real simple. Key management. Pardon me? I know there's supposed to be a break halfway through, but they didn't tell me when we were going to do it. Oh, then let's take a break now. We'll come back at, say, 4 o'clock. Oh, come on. So then let's take a 15-minute break, and we'll start it back up at 2:30.